Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the YSF podcast. I'm Andy Morgan, Media Manager at YSF and your host for the podcast. Before we get into the topic for this episode, a quick thank you to everyone who has interacted with us on social media and suggested topic ideas. We really appreciate that. It is the YSF podcast, but this is very much a podcast that wants to use examples of good practice from people and organisations across South Yorkshire and West Yorkshire. It isn't merely to shout about work that we have a hand in. We see our role to connect, influence and provide, and we know there are many, many organisations doing great things in the world of sport and physical activity in their communities. And this is about showcasing you as much as it is about us. So if you work in the sport and physical activity sector and you want to hear about a particular topic, let us know. We'll connect with partners from across the two counties and put an episode together on that topic. You can get in touch with us on social media. We are at Yorkshire Sport on Twitter. You can email us media@yorkshiresport.org. Now, this episode is quite a lengthy one, but if you check the episode details or show notes, you'll see it's been split into separate parts, so you can come back to it at various points if that suits you better. Also in there are some of the resources and websites that we mentioned during the episode, which you can also find if you go to yorkshiresport.org/podcast. Welcome to Firvale Community Centre, where we're recording today, just outside the centre of Sheffield, just to the north of the centre of Sheffield. And we're here today to talk about asset-based community development. More specifically, we're going to talk about how that approach has been put into practice in Burngreave, which is not too far from here. To do the majority of the talking are two people alongside me. Firstly, Catherine Mudge, who is one of two people who leads on our focus community work. When we talk about focus communities, that is 36 communities across the two counties that have been identified as where we can have the biggest impact, and 70% of our resources are directed into those areas. Hello to you, Catherine.
Hello.
Alongside Catherine is a lady who you rarely see without a beaming smile, and she's got one on now as I introduce her, and that is Safia Saeed, Project Coordinator for Active Burngreave and a real driving force behind the project in the last few years since its inception. Welcome, Safia.
Thank you.
We put out yesterday on Twitter that we were going to be recording and we got a lot of engagements. You said you were going to sing. Have you rehearsed anything? Do you need a prompt? Do you need
a
cue?
I'm professional. I don't need rehearsing.
You don't need rehearsals. Okay, that's fine. Before we get into the how, we've done that. The asset-based approach has been put into action. We'll lay our own foundations for this episode and do the what, the where, and the why. So for the what, Catherine, I'm coming to you. And I know it's a question you get asked a lot, and you've been around most recently in London talking about this approach. But people will have different awareness, understanding, and involvement in an asset-based approach. But summarise it if you can. What do we mean by an asset-based community development approach?
Yeah, so quite simply, it just means asset-based community development is what it stands for. And it means rather than looking at a deficit model or looking at what's bad or what's not, what we haven't got, we start by looking at what we have got and the strengths in a community. So, and by assets, we can mean anything from people to places to facilities to green spaces. And it's a case of trying to discover an area, trying to really unpick it, try to understand it, and then look at what brilliant things are already there and build upon those strengths rather than, as I say, looking at a deficit model.
And Saf, as someone who's lived in Burngreave, how long have you lived in Burngreave and Sheffield for?
Good 13 years now.
13 years. So as somebody, take your kind of the role that you do now, but as someone who lives in the community, how would you describe Burngreave to somebody who hadn't heard of Burngreave before?
Burngreave, it's a very, very bright, bright, colourful bowl of salad, really. We have everything in there. Community spirits in Burngreave is quite high. It's very based on families. Everybody's recognised by everyone, whether you walk past them or you have something in common. Children go to the same school, same mosque, same church. Just everybody says hello to everybody. It's very, very friendly, and you find that out typically outside the post office. Everyone waves at everyone. It's full of spices, it's full of culture, it's full of colours, it's full of different ethnicity. It's a very, very friendly platform, very friendly area. It's absolutely unfair, the certain stereotypes that we have. Local businesses are thriving, community engagement is really good, amazing cohesion from just locals. They sort of volunteer for each other without anything profit acceptable.
You spoke then about the different sort of demographic makeup. You're Somali, is that quite a dominant in that community? What sort of is Somali the mix community. There?
Yeah, Somali, we have a lot of Ethiopians, Yemenis that were there since 1940s, a lot of Sudanese, a lot of newcomers, new arrivals, three generations, you know, all sorts of grammar. Yeah, different backgrounds there.
SAF's been a very positive picture there, which is great. And I suppose that's when we talk about asset base, saying what's strong, not what's wrong, which I have read from a website. I've not made that up myself. So you might listen to that and go, well, why are you doing something like the active Burnaby project? Why in that area?
Yeah, so I mean, Burnaby is everything that Safia said is absolutely right. And as a non-resident of Burnaby, I feel that from the minute you walk into the area. But unfortunately, there are so many stereotypes around the area of it being an unsafe area, there being lots of community tensions. It is bottom or top of all the wrong lists. So deprivation is very high. There's a huge health inequality. There's a bus route that runs from one side of Sheffield into Burngreave, and the life expectancy is reduced by, on average, about 10 years just on one bus route. So there are brilliant things about Burngreave, absolutely. However, there are some significant challenges that the area also has, particularly around health inequality.
So that's the why. How did it first come about then? Because this was Yorkshire Sport Foundation's first step into this approach, perhaps going away from the more traditional sport development work. How did it come about in the first instance of picking Burngreave, obviously what you spoke about there, and then leading on to getting the funding to make the project happen?
Yeah, so this work started over 3 years ago now. Initially, it was a national pilot, one of two, one in Norwich and one in Sheffield. And it came about really on the back of a sport relief event that YSF delivered, as I say, 3.5 years ago. And we successfully worked with Comet Relief on that and had built a partnership with them. And this project was a pilot with Comet Relief and with Sport England, and they were really testing a couple of things. They wanted to test whether a place-based approach was an effective way of changing the way we deliver physical activity. They wanted to look at how we could involve local people more in decision-making and ideally get some real sustainability from a project that previous programmes hadn't been able to achieve. They were looking at whether the two parties could work together because they'd previously never done that and they're from slightly different worlds. So they were looking at that. And then lastly, they were looking at whether at the time CSPs or now active partnerships were the right home for this kind of project and whether we had the right type of skills and the right and whether we were embedded enough locally to be able to do this. So they approached us initially to say, we want a project in Sheffield, and it was our job to go and try and understand and really get to grips with Sheffield and see where a project like this would work. I was involved fairly early on, and my background is in community development and knew parts of Sheffield very well and knew that this was an ideal project for Burngreave. There were a number of other areas that this could have worked in, and I think still would have had the same success, but Burngreave has the right ingredients, so it has a really thriving third sector. It has a huge number of assets. There's a real community spirit, as Safia said. However, there were issues around, as I say, health inequality and inactivity particularly. The area has had significant amounts of investment before, millions and millions of pounds, particularly through European New Deal funding. But the belief, particularly from the community and from partners, was that that funding wasn't necessarily managed in the right way. It was the community felt done to rather than involved. And so it was really interesting for us to look at working in this way, which is significantly different to how any investment had been delivered before in Burngreave. So it kind of aligned, and it turned out to be a really good idea.
You can say that now 3 years down the line, and I mean, you were positive about it at the start, but how daunting was it for perhaps you, as you mentioned you've got a community development background anyway, but for YSF and for yourself, taking that new way of working, there must have been a bit of apprehension, or was it a, you know what, let's try it and see what happens?
Definite apprehension. It was a brand new thing for YSF, 100%. And Fortunately, we had a lot of backing from our senior leaders who were kind of happy to let me get on with it, which is great because that is really important. It was a big, well, it was a potential risk for the organisation. It was something new and they were entrusting quite a large opportunity with us, which was brilliant. And as I say, there was lots of support. However, we knew we had to get this right because it was a fairly significant amount of money, first and foremost, but also it's a particular way of working that I'm really passionate about and wanted to make sure that this worked because it's important that we show it's far better to involve the community rather than have something done to them. And so I was really keen that this was going to work because I wanted other areas to then adopt the same method. This isn't new, I'll be absolutely clear with that. To the sports sector, ABCD is fairly new. However, yeah, within the community and third sector, this is something that voluntary sector organisations have been doing for decades, and this is not a new thing. And so, as I say, previous experience, I knew that this would be an effective way of delivering sport and activity. However, there are always risks when you start any project. It's dependent on people. All of this work is about people, and if you don't find the right people initially, it can take a lot longer. It can still work, but it can take significant amount of time.
You have put together a sort of a 9-step, in loose terms, I guess, process that you go through. So when you've decided on Burngreave and everything we've spoken about, what is the first thing that you did?
So yeah, I spent a couple of months, probably about 3 months, really getting to know the community. So spending a lot of time in the community, having brilliant food in the community, which, you know, it's a chore. But just spending time meeting people, getting to know groups, kind of rekindling partnerships that I'd had previously with local groups in the area, asking people the same sorts of questions about, you know, who do I go to if I want X, who do I go to if I want Y, and a certain person's name was coming up quite often, and I knew Sophia from previous work that we'd done together with a project called Sportivate, and so the next stage was to try and look at who potentially could be our community development worker. So we did a lot of advertising locally. I approached people that I knew would be brilliant for the role and supported them to apply. It was a brand new role for us as an organisation. We'd not had something like this before, so we knew we needed to take a different step rather than a bog standard, you know, out on the internet, apply for this job. It needed to be different to that. And virtually, you know, twisted a certain person's arm to make sure that she got an application in.
And a certain person, I think, Saf, this is the longest I've known you to be quiet for the last 10 minutes. We'll give you your chance, whether it be through the medium.
I'm rehearsing my song.
The medium, I was going to say, through the medium of song or otherwise.
Yeah.
Just see, from what Catherine said there, a well-known and respected person within your community. What was your experience of sport or physical activity? So when Catherine sort of approached you and said, this is what we're looking to do, what was your initial reaction? Do you think, yes, this will work?
No, this won't work.
You can't
physically see me, but I'm completely opposite to what sports stands for, and the active. I'm absolutely zero in terms of activity. I may walk to my bed or to the kitchen for a purpose, but I'm the most least active person, really. Obviously, I have 5 children, so I am active in certain, but not in a sporty way. So when she mentioned the posts, there's no way I knew that I was going to get qualified for. One thing I was qualified for is the actual community work. I work with the community anyway, but it's the approach of the Yorkshire Foundation that Catherine had to train me through. So yeah, you have to give the position that I was given as a community development worker. It gave me more than I gave it, so equally. So I've learnt a lot in terms of how I could put out some fires with sports and activities and to approach now confidently anybody and say we could use this as a tool. Community plus activity equals moving forward. And like I said, puts out a lot of fire.
Is that one of the, we'll come on to sort of important things to focus on towards the end, but like Sasa, their sort of interest in sport and physical activity was minimal.
Nothing.
But she was the right person. So is it kind of, you can teach and educate and give people the information to know how sport and physical activity can address the issues. But is that one of the integral things, getting that right person or people within a community that people know and trust? Because you're coming in new to a community.
Yeah.
People are going to take a long time to have that trust for you.
Absolutely. And that this role, if done properly, needs to be, it needs to be someone that people go to for help about anything, and probably sport is nowhere near that list. And particularly for Safia, it wasn't a priority for her. And in terms of how I knew Safia would be great for this, it was, I knew what was important to her as a person, which was family and her area, and very passionate about making things equal and trying to destroy the stereotype of her area. And I knew that that was the most important thing, and her children. And so it was a case of me trying to weave sport into that, to say, actually, I get that sport is not your thing, but it has the power to do X, Y, and Z. And initially, there, you know, it took a bit of persuasion.
Yeah. A couple of years
of persuasion. Yeah. But there's nothing better than seeing it firsthand. And luckily, not only Safia, we've got a number of brilliant community activators in the area that were a similar kind of mindset, but as soon as they started to do something, they realised the power that sport and activity had. And actually, it's not about what activity it was about the fact that activity has no language necessarily, it has no status, and so everyone was on a level playing field whilst involved in that activity. And for certain people in Burngreave, that's the first time they've ever been on a level playing field with me or Saf or anyone. And that was what I think sparked interest for Safia in sport, because it was evident that it didn't matter who you were or where you'd come from when you were out on that field or in that hall or whatever.
Yes.
So Saf, as someone in the community, I'm probably going to ask you to talk about each other at various points. As Catherine, someone you knew her from before. You knew Catherine from before, so you did have it. You knew
I know her professionally. I've seen her. She saved a couple of. She helped me out with an old project before, so I know her that way.
What would you say for other people in perhaps Catherine's position in the sector, might be completely new to someone who they're going to say, "I want you to come and be to work with me on this project involving sport and physical activity." Yeah. What Catherine do particularly to win your trust, because you mentioned at the start that a lot of projects come in, there's lots of money, lots of fanfare, and then they disappear and you kind of go, well, we're back at square one. So from your perspective, someone living in the community, what was it that Catherine did to convince you that this was sport and activity and this project could work
It was a 50-50 relationship. The project that we worked before, Sport Evade, Catherine didn't know me and didn't know what I was about, but she did understand that I was trying to help about 11 young men to set up a football, which I have no idea how to do that, which Catherine did. So she came through with a bit of funding and support and everything around it. So I've seen the way she works, how she's 100% does what she says, really. So that's what won me over in terms of that. And she understood me in terms of, I have nothing to do with sports at that moment, but I was willing to help kids from my area to move forward. So it was a 50-50 relationship, to tell you the truth. And then so when this position came, she saw the passion that I may have and that little, I'm willing to learn. It's not about me not learning anything. I'm willing to learn. But I think the fear that she saw in me, because I didn't work for 20 years, so the fear that she's seen in me, has she seen it in my community? So for her to encourage one person, it just had a rapid effect on everybody else. So if I was scared of getting involved in activities and engagement and everything, then the next mother or the next person that looks like me or comes from the same background as me or comes from the same area as me has the same fear in terms of the word sport, how sportive, is it typically you want me to become a certain size? Do I need status? What kind of trainers? I can't afford trainers. So that kind of fears that we have, what if I'm not fast enough? So once they've seen Catherine's management skills in terms of training me, So because, like I always say, you can't sell it if you don't believe it. So training me, then that, and I was at the front line, and she pushed me to become on the front line. Then the others have copied and pasted that. I can go to the next family or the next mother and say, look, I can do it, I'll hold your hand. But at all times, Catherine was holding everybody's yeah. hand. Eventually, she was really protecting everybody in terms of not falling back.
So they're about a 50-50, and I guess that's the kind of doing with yeah. as opposed to two and coming of, we are the organisation, we've got the money, so you will do as we say. And the next step, once you've identified SAF and appointed SAF in this case, is to work on project outcomes. I guess traditionally, correct me if I'm wrong, you've got more experience in this sector than me, it might have been very top-down and number-driven of outcomes. How did you go about identifying what the outcomes wanted to be from this project?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. In majority of the time you get given, when you apply for funding, you're given a certain set of outcomes that you have to achieve, normally with a number. And what is brilliant about this project, and particularly the funder, is that it's not about the number, it's about the way that you're doing it and the learning from it, which has enabled this project to be what it is. I think in terms of how we came up with the outcomes for this project is that we involved the community with that. So we held what was grandly called a outcome framework workshop. But basically,
that's great plain English language there. We'll have to update that
Via our evaluators, Shepherd & Moyes Limited, who helped us evaluate this project. So they ran a workshop where we invited a mixture of people in the room, some residents, some workers in the area, some councillors, some leaders of community sector organisations, young people, old people, a real mixture. And we basically asked them, what do you think we should focus on? We've got some money. We didn't mention how much at this stage. It was about a case of what would you really want to focus on? And after about a 3-hour kind of discussion, we came up with a group of outcomes that everybody agreed on. And that was crucial for this project because it right at the start, it got people on board and it was something that they were interested in rather than working towards something that someone else over typically, you know, in an office somewhere had said. This was about people having the chance to genuinely think about what they wanted and be involved with how they were going to make that happen. So that is a really important step and one that I would then take forward to do with every project that we do from now on.
And you do that at various stages. We know we're talking about at the start of the project here, and it's one of the first things you do, identify those overarching outcomes. Is this something that will then be repeated throughout to check that's still what the community wants, or specific projects within the project?
Absolutely. So we did, in about 6-month periods, we did something called Learning to Action, which was basically that. So we'd look at and said, right at the start, we said we wanted to do X, Y, and Z. Is that still relevant, or do we need to park that one and move on to something else? Is there something else that is more pressing now? Has anyone got any particular issues, or do we think that particular sectors of the community are being isolated more so than others? And at all stages, it's the community that make those decisions, not me, not SAF, not anyone sat in an office. It was about the community genuinely thinking about what they wanted to achieve. And don't get me wrong, we did a huge, probably about 6 months worth of consultation before we got to that stage, and the community came to us with all sorts of things they wanted to solve, some of which are way out of our control. We want a new house, I want a new house, I want the bins to be collected on time, I want to feel safe when I go to my local park. And this is, again, the role of the sports sector is sport is very powerful, but it can't change the world on its own. And that's where it's our job, and it's my specialism in trying to weave sport into some of those issues. So particularly around the crime and safety element that came up a lot in Burngreave, it's about, right, well, we're not the police, we can't enforce that, and we also can't increase the amount of funding that the police get to do that. But what we can do is look at some activities that can engage young people and find them something to do so that they're not within those areas or the no-go zones that were existing at the time. And that's the role, and that's the 50-50 partnership that, yeah. that SAF has the fantastic knowledge of the community and is the go-to person. Everybody knows who she is. You can't walk down the street, can't have a quick walk at lunchtime because we're stopped by literally every person.
How did the people you spoke to in the community react to that approach, both during and then perhaps what you were, when you were talking to people, of positive reaction they were being consulted, or was it a kind of you're the experts, you should be telling us what we need? Or
no,
what?
Definitely consulted. At the beginning we got a lot of no-nos, but they were willing to hear us out. You know, like I said, a lot of people approach out, but even I had to prove myself to the community to say, look, I'm not, it's not extortion something, it's not this, it's not a trip. We will keep you and maintain you sustainable if we can, but let's just focus on things that is working for you right now. Can we adjust? So, a lot of people welcome the idea that we want to do something about it. And a lot, it's strange because they didn't think about themselves. They were thinking about a lot of them, the way I would automatically say, right, can you keep my children safe? Yeah. Can you keep them activities? Can we, instead of me thinking about myself, what can I do? So a lot of the women, we had to encourage them that, you know, that's probably the things that we did tell them, which is, you know, like, what about you? You know, how's your mental health status? Are you fine? Do you have friends? Are you isolated? What is it you're fearing and stuff like that? So that sort of human approach was very necessary as well. Found out what the fears are and try to divert that into sections in terms of, okay, women's group, we can help you that. If you are limited in access or you have some sort of disability, we can team you up with a group of, you know, women that are disabled, or maybe we can, maybe if you need a depression or something, we can neutralize you. So we didn't approach things that are impossible, but we do sort of signpost people if we can. And the individuals and people identifies us that we were the problem solvers kind of thing. And it's great. I mean, people want to solve their problems through anything. So for us, the more that we listened, the more that they wanted to volunteer, the more that they felt that they want to approach even a little bit of stretch. And we didn't have to do a lot of motivation. They did it for themselves after a time because they knew we were going to come through this time. So the money came quickly. Yeah. We acted on straight away. Catherine was very conscious of the timeline. You know, we don't want to talk too much. They're talking a lot. They've a lot of people taking their data away. Nothing has been done in the area. And there was a lot of glooming atmosphere in that area. But once we started the project, a lot of smiles, and we had to go to people. Yeah. And then down the road, they started coming to us.
What were the outcomes that were decided around social isolation, mental health?
Yeah, so there were 9 project outcomes, so right. I won't list them all.
Okay. We'll direct people to the webpage where they're all listed if you want to look into some more, but I'll let you summarise.
Yeah, so there were 9 project outcomes. They revolved around community safety, physical activity, improving mental health, and around social connection. As Safia said, a lot of people within the Burngreave community are fairly isolated, and even people that you wouldn't necessarily think, language particularly is very isolating, and can mean that people can't involve themselves in mainstream activities, if you like. But also that I think there was an assumption, and there typically is an assumption, that because there's a large Somali community here, that everybody in the Somali community knows each other and would speak to each other. In reality, that isn't the case at all. And it's really understanding. I mean, I've learned a lot from this project and from SAF around the complexities of even within the Somali community, about the different tribes, the different, so that certain tribes will talk to each other, other tribes won't. Some of the important information that as a sports sector we would not probably know, unless we happen to be from the Somali community, we probably wouldn't know that. That's really important, and you can only get that from being present. And I'd urge, particularly at kind of project management level, it's great that we've got SAF, and it's great that other projects will have grassroots workers and people on the ground, that's brilliant, but it's really, really important, and I'd encourage more of the management level to be on the ground and understanding it, because you learn so much as you do, rather than being sat trying to manage something and checking in with someone and having information secondhand.
Not along their staff.
Yeah, absolutely. Catherine, when she's busy or I'm busy, we must have a weekly catch-up meetings. If not, at the beginning, for us to make the foundation, I needed a lot of support professionally, things that you could do, you can't do, a budget, what's allowed in the fundings, certain management decisions that needs to be done there and then. So Catherine had to be on the beat with me. She had to walk around the areas with me. She had to observe herself, the kind of passion it is. She sees it through us having a coffee or meal or a trip. I constantly feed her back. So that was my job. I felt that things are relevant or not relevant. She had to be informed. Then that way, it's up to her where she puts that information. So she will use certain concept of stories. Case stories are very, very important, but we need to have the impact for us to have the case studies that we need to do that. But it is without a management support, I don't think anybody would have certain answers or certain rules and regulations and structure. Really, the community needs, it's a new approach, new project. Everybody needs structure, and I think it's the management's job to have that structures to say yes, yay or nay, you know, in one way, and for the workers to actually say, actually, can we just discuss that little point, because I think we should, can we do that? And I think it's a teamwork. If you two are on the same page and have the same target, you know, and then the community will believe in you a bit more. But when we're scattered and they always see me and not Catherine, or just Catherine and not me, then we have a problem there. And also make sure that everything that you do is quite unique to them, so understand that they are not, they're going to get there, but they're not you at the moment. So the information that you're fed with, they don't get it. So you'll have to put in, it water down everything, all the information, the funding, the training, everything needs to be watered down to the community's level of understanding and engagement.
So once you've identified the outcomes, the next step is you've got here developing understanding, including sort of asset mapping and things. You've put a timescale on that. But what are those next final two steps in the planning process?
Yeah, so this is about making sure you don't miss anyone, and making sure that you recognise every kind of asset. So typically in the sports sector, we've looked for sports coaches or volunteers or someone that we recognise. But this project is about, I don't know, working with hairdressers, because actually that's where people go to. It's working with cafe owners, it's working with people that are the local shop owners, the local businesses. It might be talking to the schools about the staff that support during primary school years. It's about making sure you're not missing any part of the puzzle. You're going to miss some people, absolutely. It's not, you know, that's going to happen, but it's about trying to make sure that you're limiting the number of people you miss, and recognising that everyone has a skill set, and that could be driving the bus, it could be making the food for the event, it doesn't matter what that is, everybody contributes something, and everyone feels that they've got their opportunity to contribute. And in doing that and bringing those people together, you're helping develop the network, so that the next step, step five, is about support to that existing network. So realising, so you found them, you know they exist, and then supporting them, not just saying, oh yeah, there's a project that's going to happen here, you might want to get involved, and then 2 years later you go back to them and say, oh, did you enjoy that? Actually talking to them on a regular basis. And that was a partnership role, really. So yeah, SAF would have a big, huge list of all the groups that we and all the people, and would know people. And then I would try and look at how could we make that a bit more strategic, if you like. So could we group certain groups together? Could we group organisations together that were similar, that would needed a similar kind of support? We asked them what they might need, and that's, rather than going in with a predefined list of either qualifications or training courses or whatever, we'd said, right, what is it that we can help you with? And that a lot of that came around governance and funding. They didn't use those words, the posh words that we put on them, but about how can we make ourselves more professional, and how can we help ourselves get some more funding in. And so I came up with and made courses based upon what people had said, and then we delivered a number of those so that when we were ready to kind of activate and do some stuff, people felt confident to be able to do it.
We shared information as well within those trainings.
Absolutely.
Because everybody was from different organisations and stuff like that. But before they even said the word professionals, it took, through the consultation, it took Catherine and I to visit every single organisation that were on the list or the planning list and find out not only things that they mentioned, also things that we think that they missed. So registration tables and the entrances or safety aspect of it. We say, oh, there's too many kids here, but there's less volunteers. So Catherine will, you know, help to pay for some safeguarding, first aid. A lot of the stuff that they may not understand the concept of it. So she'll water them down or get me on it as well, whether I need it or not. It's just the fact that they see a face that's familiar there. So as long as they see you complete, you are in every single steps, not just the finishing line, then they feel that they can come and talk to you. So before it was me, then now it's like they recognize Catherine on her own. They'll approach her on her own. They don't feel that just because she's a manager of 6 projects that she's any different and she's unapproachable. And that's what it is. Because of the amount of months and days that she spent on that road with me, like step by step.
There's even some little examples there.
Yeah.
We're going through steps on here, and it's not always necessarily that logical. We're just using a framework to work to. But I guess from what you said there and from my perspective, there are no shortcuts. You can't go, we'll go and see these people. No, we might come to those later. You have to be very thorough, and it can be, like, people might be going, this is an overwhelming thing to try and do. But is that the secret, in inverted commas, to making something like this work, of being so thorough and so all-inclusive?
Yeah, you've got to be present. You've got to be present, because all of this work is about trust, and it goes at the speed of trust, for the little phrase. It's about people, not only people trusting you, but them feeling trusted as well. Because if you're really going to do this work, people need to feel genuinely able to deliver once you're gone, or do something once you're gone. And if you don't quite get the support right, it will always be that they lean on you. And so when you move away, they're going to fall. So you need to be present enough so that people not only trust you, but then start to fully listen to what it is that you're saying and take that learning on board. And it takes time. You know, the first, as Safia said, we went to hundreds of different groups, loads and loads of different organisations, and met them. And probably the first 3, 4, even 5 times, people would be reticent to what it was that we were saying, because they've had such a long period of time where people didn't say what they were going to do, or they didn't deliver on what they said, and they did parachute in, deliver something and disappear again. So there were trust issues, as there would be in most communities up and down the country. And so it takes time. There is no shortcut, and it takes you to actually want to be there. People will work you out fairly quickly if you are someone that genuinely believes in this, or someone that is playing a bit of a game and it's part of the job. If you show that you actually genuinely enjoy what it is that you're doing, as I say, it's infectious. Passion is infectious, and if you're able to show that humbly, then people will genuinely want to help you. And
they might
not
be passionate. They've got lack of. They want to do it, but some of them have got lack of passion, so they have to feed off your energy. So you've got to be realistic with them straight away. And it's also certain communities, this community, have learned that they throw money at them. So they're like, just give us the money, you know, typically, and go away. They didn't think that we actually care. So it's the tools that they... So when you say to them, right, look, I'm going to give you the money, but I'm not going to give you the money yet. Let's work out about you. Let's reassemble your projects. Let's find out what's going on. And they were like, oh, God. So at the beginning, it was like, who are you to question what I do? Just give me the money. Some of the organisation, large organisation. But after that, Catherine just went, look, for you to do that, you've got to jump on a couple of hurdles for me, and then we can, you know, if you genuinely really need it, then we'll go forward. So we had to really get tough as well ourselves. So it's a 50-50 relationship as well. So we had to beat, you know, mummy them as well, you know, a lot, and tell them, like, this is not the approach, that you can't just come in. So a lot, so from a local point of view, I couldn't do that. So Catherine had to come in and put the manager hat on and said, yes, no, you know, I can't do that. I still have to live in the area, so I can't really say no, you know, certain things. But, you know, it's yes to certain things. I was just there to support. They had to understand that somebody else is more authoritized that could take on those shoes. So that's the good thing about it. But in terms of the language bridge and everything like that, you do feel very confident. And through the interview, I mean, Catherine knew me, but she didn't know me. I would have suggested that a good walk around the area and see how the people react to the community development worker per se can bring you results. And then once you feel like that person is well known and feel makes people comfortable and knows people's stories, it's not about just knowing faces. You got to know people's names, you got to know their stories, you got to know what's behind the scenes. The quicker you find out where they're paining from, the quicker you can have that positive effect on. And that's what they like. They like a personal care, not just a professional.
Spoke quite a lot there about the plan. I mean, there has to be a plan and a direction, and there does need to be some outcomes of what you're going to do. Now, move on to the doing section of it, I guess, and the next step on this, the approach that you took, and it's mobilise community members and assets. Plain English that for us, if you will, and what that involved and what you did.
Mobilising the community is basically, as I say, encouraging people to do some stuff. So people will step forward. Passion is infectious, and people will see the passion that particularly me and Saf have for the project, but also other people have stepped forward and shown their interest, and that breeds and it gathers momentum, and more people come forward and say, oh, so-and-so said, done that, and I'd like to have a go at that. And this step is about trying to get as many of those people that have shown any sort of interest and encourage them and show them that they've got the skills to be able to do this. This sort of project will only work if we do ourselves out of a job. So I don't want to be supporting Burngreave forever, and it won't work if I am, because it means that the people haven't got to grips with doing things for themselves. And actually, Burngreave is fantastic as a community, and everybody is desperate to do things for themselves, and they want to improve their lives, and they want to improve their children's lives. And so this step really in Burngreave was quite easy, because we had, I think within the first year, we had about 70 people across the area come forward and say, I really want to volunteer and I want to do that on a regular basis. It was Safia's role to find those people, and when she called, everyone came. And we typically did that through events initially. So we would put on events and we'd get the community to basically run the events for us with our support, but near enough they were doing it for us. And as soon as they'd done something once and shown that they could do it, and we celebrated at every opportunity the fact of how brilliant they were, people gained confidence. And then it's a case of, rather than supporting an event next time, actually they might set their own up, or they might do a small version in their own community or for their own family. So that's what that step is about. It's about finding people, giving them the confidence to do it, and then supporting them to do it, and then carrying on the support.
Supporting, I presume, is both a little bit of finance, not throwing loads of money, but also your expertise, guidance where they've perhaps not done it before. Is that the double?
Yes, it's like a it's a combination of things, really. A lot of sports qualifications are fantastic and they're needed. However, they don't actually teach you the important skills, I think, in being able to get up in front of people, facilitate things. That is a skill that you can learn in any aspect. So that might be as a mum getting the kids ready for school, or as a dad getting the kids ready for school. That is a hard job. And actually a number of people in this community do that on a daily basis. And it was about identifying with them that they have that set of skills, building their confidence to say, you know, you do that for your kids, what's stopping you doing that for this group of young people or this group of adults? Or have you thought about doing this and this and this? And encouraging people to step out of their comfort zone, to have a go at things. 99% of the time, as soon as they've had a go at something, they they exceed at it and excel at it, and then they want to do it again. And an important step, it is on here, about it's step number 8, but it's about celebrating that success. What's absolutely crucial is people feel valued and people feel like they've done a good job. Particularly when they're new to something, it can be really daunting to step out of your comfort zone. And then if you feel like you didn't really get the recognition for it, people naturally would fall back right into that comfort zone again. So it's about making sure that we not only give people the opportunity, but then celebrate that they've done a fantastic job, because without that, their confidence level will dip down again. And as I say, more often than not, we're absolutely bowled over by the number of people that came forward to get involved with things, and we were able to support, as I say, up to 70 within the first year. There's probably over 100 volunteers now that are doing things regularly on at least a weekly basis, and not just supporting, they're actually running their own organisations. Even, I mean, Safia is an example of that herself anyway. Safia started as a mum concerned that there were groups of boys hanging about on the streets, so she decided she was going to set up initially a club. She didn't really know what it was going to be about, and then she found that they wanted to do football, and so that was the angle. And we've got numerous mums and community members that have done exactly the same thing, where they have actually had the solution to the problem. It's just previously they've not been heard, and with a bit of support from us professionally and financially, it's about them seeing that they have got those skills, they can do it, and then celebrating the success when they do that.
You may have heard the noise start to get a little bit loud, and then we're in just next to the cafe in the community centre, and if Saf's prominence in the community was in any doubt, she's just gone and you might have noticed the noise levels are a little
everyone.
Bit quieter. So thank you, Saf. Yes. But yeah, you touched on some examples there, and I, before we was on my way to meet you guys today, looked on Nurture Development, we've not mentioned yet, but they are, in terms of people want to know more about asset-based community development, that's who we've used for training before. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a blog on there, went through, looked yesterday, and you've touched on that. It says, local shop owners have completed FA coaching qualifications and developed a football session in the green space. A local cafe owner has undertaken walk leader training and a community sports leadership award in order to provide activities for men who come to his cafe daily. There's another 4 or 5 examples of countless ones in there, and we'll put the link to that blog if you want to go and have a look on. But that's not putting on a football session at 5 o'clock every Tuesday.
Yeah.
That's just making this activity part of where people are already going. Saf, would you say that's been a part of the success of not just, yes, there's been events and they've played their part, but making them to be more part of what people do and their understanding. So going to the cafes, you walk in there, that's you being active, but it'll also help with your mental health.
Yeah, it is. The most important thing, like Catherine said, celebrating the individual. I just want to touch upon that. In terms of the volunteers that we get, every community has to reflect its own volunteers. So you have volunteers / ambassadors, whatever you want to call them, community engagement, free volunteers. So if we celebrate their own, then the next and queue of people will look like their own. And then that's the only way. There's no better people and not better soldiers to protect the area than their own area. So we're here to empower. And Catherine, if this ever finishes, Catherine will leave, I will leave, whatever happens. But they will stay, and they will have to live with whatever consequences or whatever impact we give them, whatever measurements. So we have to give them enough tools to blossom. And that comes from the celebration as well. And that's the trusted development that we're trying to do. Us celebrating them means we trust them. We value them. They trust us on the next event. Every time we have an event, our numbers increase, if we're talking about technically. But at the same time, the spirit, we tell them to come anytime. If we're both of us leading it, they will. We're signed for coming through for them, so they will come through for you. There's an instant loyalty bond happens in the community once you come through with them. Once, in terms of the whether they do a football coach or they'll be doing the football coach voluntarily, whether we're there or not. However, the fact that Active Burn Grief has made them professionally and give them a platform that should make them sustainable. The training that we do to the local shopkeeper, from the local lollipop lady, from the local whatever training we give them, or Catherine sort of waters down for them in terms of self-development, how to approach your own groups, how to leadership, all walks of life understand the English. They don't understand English. There's translators on the... We use their own daughters and their own sons to volunteers or maybe help us with the training. So in terms of bringing all the organisations together and give water down a training for them, that empowers them, and that should keep them understanding how to become professionals. So if future funders they want to approach, they know how to handle them, how to talk to them. So I think that's a great way of giving them weapons.
So we've spoken about how you've gone about things, and it's been going for nearly 3 years now, the Active Burn Grief project. We've also not just picked it up because it's what we do. It has been a success. Looking at some of the stats, as we tend to do in the sector, but for the 2 year phase of the project, some of these, when people might be thinking, well, this is all great, but this is community development, how is this getting people active? I look at some of these, 95% of almost 1,100 participants who were engaged were classed as inactive before. There's been an increase in people responding to feeling less socially isolated, better aspirations, lots of training opportunities, over 150, 70 odd volunteers. That's all the stats, and yeah, they form part of the evaluation, but there's the stories and the personal impact, which this kind of approach, that's the real story and the success behind it, isn't it? And SAF, one that people may have heard of, see quite regularly on the news, on the radio, and his big brother Burn Grief. Give us an overview of what that project is, how it came about.
The project is a mentoring project. It's a youth mentoring project. It's run by them, by the youth, for the youth, and it's designed by them. So it's basically pulling each other up. So we've got a bunch of secondary boys looking up to college boys, and the boys in the college are every step that they take, they mentor basically to the secondary boys. And then on top of that, we've got six champions that we recognize, the alpha males in the 12 to 20 years olds. And the six champions, after 2 years of equipping them with good qualifications of leaderships and communications and activities, and we choose three of them and they become group leaders. That's basically the cycle of the structure of the project. It's been absolutely great working with those young men. We've got good 70 plus boys on the books, and 20 comes every Saturday, 50 to 20 comes every Saturday. Play football or basketball or dodgeball.
That's when you spoke about using physical activity as a reason to get people there, but then it's the mentoring thing is the
most important
focal point of it, really, and taking people away from, you know, there's gang crime and things in Burn Grief. From your experiences of some of the individuals, we're going to touch on Sahal's story at the end of the podcast for people to listen to, but are there any others that you particularly pick on where you think, you know, they've changed their direction of where they might have gone or where they were before?
Yeah, a lot. Crime is, in Sahel's case, he could have gone into crime, you know. But there's a lot of boys that could have gotten into mental health or been bullied at school and everything like that. There's ones that are very squeaky clean, but they don't have the self-confidence or the self-esteem. We got the quiet ones like Abdul Malik, who is now started this week. Actually, I haven't seen him. He's aerospace engineering in first year of university. Very proud of him. He would shake if you put him in front of anyone. He's a very quiet boy. But now you just put him on any stage and a microphone, you don't know the kind of wisdom that comes out of him. There's a lot of boys that are newcomers. Tyrone is a new leader for this year. He's going to be our leader for the next 2 years. And Tyrone is from Congo, and he is He's Italian-born and he's been here 5 years. He could hardly speak English when he first came, and now he's one of the leaders and he worked really, really hard. That means he put a lot of hours into Big Brother, turned up every Saturday. If he didn't turn up, it's the professional of even just apologising for not coming the session. And he can literally, even Catherine is very, very impressed by him, and his passion is football. So and the little ones, like the 14-year-old ones that are were smoking with it, were starting to smoke and everything. Now they come every week, try to pull them in there. We got successful stories, but we do lose some as well into drugs and into knife crimes and into mental health or just moving away from the area. But not too many. And I'm very proud to say that if I do lose them, it would be for higher education or for work.
Yeah, their aspirations are changing. And again, I don't want to give away too much what Sahal says, but he spoke about that. He now has different aspirations for what he wants to achieve in life, and that must be one of the most rewarding things for both of you when you hear people talking about that. Take away the stats that we have to report on, but in your role, that must be
boys are different. Boys, if you give them a role, that's what they want. A lot of the generation, older generation, say, oh, God, kids are very, very lazy, but they're not lazy. They just don't have a direction. You haven't pointed them direction. So boys like to be directed, structured. They don't like to be controlled and they don't like to be downsized. They like to be structured, meaning that you give them approach, how they would approach a certain problem or certain opportunity or certain leadership skill. It's up to them. They will turn up for you if you come through for them. So uniqueness, they will follow you. That takes hours and days and months of conversations. It takes time for you to take them away, divert their attention from somewhere to somewhere. When I speak to Sahal and the other leaders, and I ask them, oh, how come we don't have him on board? Leave him, they say. He's gone into drugs. They've lost a lot of friends to drugs and knife crime every day. Their friends are either on the boys like that we can't approach, that are they're in the front page, or they're on online for, you know, escaping a certain thing, or they're dealing right there and then in your face every day outside the community centres and the posters office, so you can't get away from it. But the ones that we don't save, but the ones that do make the decisions to turn up in Big Brother Burn Grief are the ones that you can really take them, and that takes personal approach.
You touched on celebrating success and to keep on Big Brother Burn Grief. Off the top of my head, you'll be able to point to more. They visited Majid, mayor of Sheffield, 18 months ago.
Yeah, it was the 6th of August.
Yeah,
so I can figure, because we need to, three months after he became a mayor, so it was after Ramadan and Eid. So we had an amazing celebration at the town hall.
So going to the town hall, they won an award at the Sheffield Celebration Sport event.
Absolutely.
And I know we spoke to you about this before, but there's lots of big stars go to that. Sheffield is sort of one of the cities in the UK for professional sport and athletes. Anthony Joshua, if you go to the Institute of Sport quite regularly, where
they got drilled, a little bit of drill game by Atiba Lyons, who's Sheffield Sharks coach as well. He came to this community centre where it was. So they've been exposed, so they just have an amazing platform right now.
And when they won that award, you've told me this story before, but what did you say to them once they got it? There was a standing ovation. At the end of what you said,
we're the only group that had a standing ovation, and it was amazing. It was honestly the pro, not because I was on it. It's because I was so proud that they took us in their hearts. That's why they stood up. They didn't stand up because we didn't stand up, because there was other people that took so much. We were the last award. The fact that they stood up is they heard us. And that's 600 people. That's 60 tables with 10 each. So that's like 600 professionals. I can breathe the £2.4 million worth of wages in my nose. And they got that. And we got to say, like, this is the first time I feel like they were more human than just sports professionals. You know what I'm saying? So they understood that these boys want to be here. They need to approach you boys like these to take, not only to be employed by you guys, it's about to employ high management position, not just to employ them in any workers. I want them to employ to higher positions because they could take you places. But what I say to them after the standing, because I had to use Stuart Rogers as a babysitter because I couldn't keep them contained. The boys were like taking selfies with everybody, including the waitresses. So it's like, stop. But yeah, they were so excited. Oh, like I said, I don't know nothing about world of sports. So the people they recognized, I wouldn't recognize them. So after the, that was at the beginning. So after the standing ovation, we got off the stairs and we stood right on our table, which is way back. And then when the program was over, the boys were like, let's go, you know, more selfies. So I held them back and I said, sit down. Now that you had a standing ovation, everybody recognized you, they will come to you, stand there. And they did come to them. Every single person in that hall has come to the three boys, taking selfies themselves and everything like that. Now that you've been recognised, said, now you've got a platform to stand there. Yeah, and they understood that. And that's because I really wanted to give them a very high dignity level of, like, you can be this, but you've worked so hard as well. Please, don't lie.
You can't put a stat or
stop
a monetary
chatting
value
to the waitresses as well. Please, stop doing that.
You can't put a stat or a monetary value on that kind 100%. Of self-esteem or self-confidence that would have... Yeah. Would have given them.
Very rich lady said that. Oh, you are our favourite lady right now. But I was like, oh my God, if I could just afford your dress at the moment. So yeah, but they're really lovely people. Yeah, we've had a great time.
What about you, Catherine? Is there a standout project or moment from across the last few years that you reflect on with particular fondness?
There are so many. I think I like the mixture of type of projects from Active Burngreave. So we've got, you know, the Big Brother Burngreave project that I've been involved with very closely and reiterate how proud I am of the boys. But there are examples of other people that have really surprised me. So we've worked with a local shopkeeper called Hamed, who I met by chance when I went into, I was visiting the Big Brother Burngreave project
Saturday.
Most Saturdays and would go in and buy a kind of drink and a Mars bar probably, sorry.
And sugar tax is fine.
Sugar tax, yeah. And we got talking and it turned out that he was wanting to run a football session for local families that he knew of. And he's gone from kind of running a shop and occasionally seeing me every week to doing first a Community Sports Leaders Award.
Which was hard.
Which was
really
hard work.
Hard.
He's also done an FA Level 1 qualification. He's looking to do a Level 2 qualification
rounders.
Now. He's done rounders, activator courses. He's running two children's sessions every week and an adult football session now. He's accessed funding from the FA directly to do that. He doesn't speak particularly great English at all. His written English is patchy.
Yeah.
And for someone like that to be at the platform where the FA actually have asked to meet with him to discuss about how they can better involve themselves with the BAME community, that in itself is a huge success of the project, but also of making sure that the sports sector actually appreciate the success that particularly the BAME community can have. The number of events that myself and Safia have gone to where Safia has been the only black person in the room.
Yeah.
And that is sickening for me.
Yeah.
And not only the, you know, being female as well is another challenge, but it's just not good enough in 2019, it is not good enough that a room full of decision makers in sport is mainly white British male, and we need to challenge that. And it's people like that have been involved in the Big Brother Burngreave project that they are our future, as corny as that sounds, and we need to invest in them properly. And people need opportunity. There's no way that those boys would have ever got on that stage or been recognised unless they were part of this project. And so, as I say, I'd really, really seek investment in other communities to allow people to have opportunity. Because without that first step on the ladder, it is virtually impossible for them to have a platform. And it's our duty, as we have that platform, to shout as loud as we possibly can about the success of those particular boys, but also the community in general. We've got ladies that have gone on to do cycling courses and are running cycling sessions across Burngreve.
Yeah, Shedmarket.
The community have absolutely taken the opportunity and have absolutely driven it home and wanted to do anything and anything that I threw in front of them, which is brilliant. And that will be the case in a number of other communities. It's about having the opportunity to do so. And as I say, what I'd like to think is in 10 years' time, that room that we go back to in some of our sporting colleagues is not white British male dominated, but is a mixture of all different ethnicities, because that's what it should be.
Yes, and one of the last things you mentioned is, and it's probably quite a simplistic one, might not take too much explanation, but the final step of review the activities, repeat. Is that the easiest thing, but quite an obvious but also very important aspect of doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. There are some of the projects, we've talked about all the brilliant things today. There are things that we have 100% got wrong and made mistakes with, and that's how you learn. They're not failures. I would never call it failure. It's about learning and
challenging.
And challenging ourselves to be better than we were the day before. Yeah. And that you only do that when you review things. Interestingly, one of the best projects we had, so Big Brother Burngreve was initially given £500, and we had similarly a project that was given £10,000, and that isn't still running. So it's not about the money, it's about the people ultimately. Yeah. That is what makes this kind of thing work. But it is, the repeat bit is in bold capitals, because you can't do this once and think it's done. It is a constant. There's no let up. There's no time to sit back and put your feet up and think, oh, I've done that now, because this work isn't like that. It needs constant mentoring. It needs constant time and care. Time. And you have to, as I've said a couple of times, you have to be present.
Yeah.
Because without that, people feel unsupported, and then gradually things start to fall down. The more kind of pillars you've got that feel trained and confident, the less likely it is to fall down. So until we've got hundreds of people in Burngreve standing up, delivering activities, feeling confident, then we will carry on.
You've probably preempted what one of my questions was going to be, was what your bit of a piece of advice be to others in the sport and physical activity sector, professionals like yourself, of how to make this work. I think you've summarised that. So, Saf, for you as someone who's in the community, what would your advice be to other people like Catherine and the professionals in the sector who are perhaps starting on this road or thinking about starting? Like, what would you say to them about how they approach it?
Well, definitely start by canvassing the area again and again. Things change rapidly in certain communities, so you have to give yourself space or enough money or whatever you need to do just to switch whenever you need to switch, because things that go really well and then before you know it, either it shuts down or you need to have a new approach to keep them on their toes, if you know what I mean. Constantly keep notes of people that you meet, and from the first to get go, try to identify the alpha characters in the communities and have them on your side, whether they promote you or whether they talk for you, you know, behalf of you, or approach people that can't be approached, or isolated people. So your volunteer bank has to have really a large bank. So, for example, we have Somali disability group, a bunch of women that weren't active because of their disability, physical disability, mental disability, whatever it is. And then one of the volunteers actually picked up the exercises as we gave them a coach to do exercises for it to be sustainable. That lady, one of them who hasn't got any disability but is their friend and in their circle, is now leading the sessions. So if Catherine ever, the money goes away, they will still be leading the sessions on their own, for example, like that. And that's because we made her believe that, or we trained her to have that volunteer. So volunteers is very, very important in it. And for professionals, definitely learn from Catherine. Really learning from Catherine is like, you have to protect the people that surround you. Your community development worker has to feel confident, trained, on her toes, but at the same time, she has to use a lot of her energy and initiative and be out there for the people, because and that only comes from somebody that is from the area. not to parachute in or anything like that. It makes the work less harder, and it makes the results a lot faster. And that's what you are fighting against time. So like Catherine said, if there's a gap between the communication of certain groups, they'll dip down again, and then you'll have to remotivate you. And it just communities give you one chance alone. If you don't come through, they're not going to bother because they will stigmatize you there and then. So you have to be careful and be very, very quick of what you say, even if you take your own time, then maybe rest up later on.
Some sad but also exciting news.
Yeah.
Sad thing is that you're moving on. You're moving on to a role with
sort of combined within it.
With the NHS and the police. When you reflect on the last 3 years, how do you think? Talk about how you've
I was spoiled to tell you the truth because I always had task three day and night.
This might be a chance for someone. You've been talking about how you've both and with support of the community to change other people's
perspective,
others' lives and varying levels. How do you reflect on how you've changed and developed in the last 3 years in this role? And now, because it seems an obvious time to look at it as you're preparing to move on to a new exciting
challenge. Catherine introduced me to this job, so I introduced my family and my children and myself to activities and sports and joining a gym for the first time. I was just arguing with my daughter here because I put her in a gym and she doesn't want to go today. It's her first day of the diet. So she's like, it's all right to have some sugar. I'm like, your first day of the diet. But it's about, you have to reflect your job. So it helps. Like Catherine said, you have to really like your job for especially community work. So I think healthier now. I'm thinking about my health a lot now. I'm thinking about my children's health. I do feel that it's sports and activities is a tool now. Before I just thought it's just made for certain types of people and not myself. Being a community work, which we do, but being professional, so I've gave me a better platform for my voice to get there. I feel like I taught some things to Yorkshire Sport itself.
Absolutely.
Bought a new flavour, mango chutney to the plate. But you know, I'm confident enough to sit in a professional table and say, I can be one of you guys. You know, before I was not that much, but I was just stereotypes, just act Burngreave alone. But now, you know, I do feel that I can be a part of that top table, and I feel like I've paid my dues, and you know, I gave the job everything I have or know. You know, I can only take Active Brain Grief to my next job, to tell you the truth, and give them a bit of this as an example or a tool for the next job, to tell you the truth, because we're fighting the same crime working for NHS.
How do you, Catherine, as someone who's worked alongside Safia for the last 3 years,
She speaks extra languages.
How proud of her are you, and how have you seen her?
I need to snap that bit.
Have you seen her develop in the time you've worked with her?
Obviously, we're immensely proud of Safia, as much as we're sad to see her go. But yeah, I mean, all joking aside, when I first, on Safia's first day, she is unrecognisable from the person that sits in the cafe now. I think Safia has done numerous things for the project, but much wider for us as an organisation. I think we do things differently, which is a complete. I don't think there's a better compliment that you can pay to someone than when they've left and you've changed as an organisation because of an individual. So I think that is significant. I think she has developed as a person that came passionate about her and her family, and her area is now fighting numerous battles across Sheffield and wider, particularly for young people. And I think that she will take that into her next job, and it will be a huge asset to the team. And we're very pleased for her and proud of her, because it's a fantastic job that she's moving on to and will have a huge impact. And we will obviously still work together. Safia is still running her two voluntary organisations that she did alongside Active Burngreave. So she'll still be doing the monitoring that is required for the project.
Yes.
Don't forget about that.
No.
The sternest tone of voice of the entire
She's still my manager.
And we're a family now.
Yes,
anyway,
yes, so we are.
That's not a problem.
Yeah.
But just as I say, the biggest compliment, I think, is that as a whole organisation, we've changed the way that we operate. And I think we're far more receptive to change now, which is not wholly down to Sophia, but is a significant, I think, is a significant, played a significant role.
One of the words we in this chat about the ABCD approach is that it's designed because it's meant to be sustainable, so that when the money goes or individuals move on, I appreciate she's still sat alongside us, but will this be a bit of a, don't know if acid test is over, a regulator saying, but when someone like Safi has been so vocal to it, this will challenge active learning grief again, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I'm not going to lie, there's a part of me that's a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
With nerves comes, you know, excitement and new things, which is what it's all about. And I think part of what SAF has done for this project is dragged in some cases, but developed in others, a number of people who feel exactly the same as SAF, who fight the same fight every day, who were alongside her and actually will naturally emerge as a leader to take to take her place.
Yeah.
So see you later, you're right. So yeah, there's numerous people that will be fantastic for the role, and we obviously will recruit into the role, and I'm more than confident we will find a replacement. And I think in a way it is a great opportunity for us, because I get asked the question a lot, is this the is it that you've found a diamond in Safia, which, you know, obviously
everybody's
But or is it that this is something that could be effective anywhere, and that there are loads of Safias running around, and I always say
there is loads,
you know, there's only one Safia Saeed, however there's lots of versions of Safia in loads of communities across the country and across the world that are doing brilliant things already. It's about having the confidence and taking a little bit of a risk to go and find those people and spending time to do that. We're fortunate in Burngreave because that time is already being spent, and there's three or four people are sat here that I know will be brilliant for the role. But in other communities, there are hundreds of versions of Safia that are raring to go. They just need the opportunity.
Opportunity and the training and the support, actually, to shine. Everybody can shine. And we've seen it happen. We've seen really good volunteers that can step up and they take over. But unfortunately, well, fortunately for me, I'm still recognised as working with Catherine in the community. They don't care about this contract and I'm gone. And you will, because once they put a label on you, like you are the go-to person, they're not going to stop that. So me and Catherine will still be working together. We're crossing paths all the time anyway. Number one, active burn group, I'm still part of it.
Thank you very much for your time. Both
thank
of
you for having us.
No, thank you very much. And it's fantastic. Hope the people listening have taken plenty from that. And Saf, congratulations on the new role.
Thank you.
We've still got a few weeks left. Thank you. We'll leave the final word. We spoke a lot about process and how we've gone about it. And we touched on Sahal, one of the mentors in Brother Burngreave project, who has started university in the last couple of weeks. We spoke to him at a celebration event that he did. And we will finish with that interview, which if you want to watch it, it will be available on our YouTube. We'll put the link in the show notes. But we'll leave the final word with him and his story. But thank you for listening. And if you've got any feedback, tweet us at Yorkshire Sports, or you can email us at media@yorkshiresport.org. Thanks for listening.
When I first came to the country, I came from Somalia, which is a country that's been having war for 24 years now. We had no education, so we got out fighting, just, you know, do things that just to get away from each other. So when I came here, I still had that mentality. The first day I went to school, I broke someone in the mirror, because that's how aggressive it was. I didn't know, I didn't understand him, I had no English, but because of what he said to me and because of what I heard from media, it's like I was afraid, or when new kids come to the country, they get bullied. And I was like, oh, you know what, that's not gonna happen to me. So, and I started playing football. With the football, when someone tackles me, I think I was taking it offensive. I just booed that person, or just, I was really aggressive, you know what I mean? It's not like something that somebody that you want to be friends with. I wasn't, I was proud of what I was doing. I just got out to swimming pool and just mess about, you know what I mean? Like, there was nothing that was good about it, what I was doing, you know what I mean? One of them is in prison. One of them, I don't have contact with them. I would have just been like one of them and end up in prison, because they would have taken me instead of me taking them to the right way. Saf first came to my school and I found that she was Somali. We have a something called Active Burn Grief that we're doing, so come on, volunteer. And I said, okay, let me hop in. After I've done my volunteering, they spoke to me and they said to me, you know what, how would you like to create something that might change like your life and other people's life? That's how we came up with Big Brother. We started it and all we did is Saturday we used to play football, but then I started to understand like the project is not just me playing football and me just getting people to play football. It's more than that. So I started taking it more serious. I started getting my friends to come. So I was targeting people especially I know that need help. Big bro just went boom, it went like that, and then that's why we're here now. The sports helped me a lot because, I mean, every time I played football, I was coming down, I was learning like how to love and everything, and I was just growing up doing sports. So that's why I love sports so much and this project, because it's something that I want to do, something that changed me, you know what I mean? And I know they can change other people's life as well in the future. As the years went down, I had my friends with me, Tess and Abdul Malik. We've been mentored by Safiya and Catherine, and then also we've been mentoring other young people to do what we do. And then we're getting qualifications, just giving qualification to young people and just saying, this, you know what, there's a job opportunity here. Do you want to go? That's actually helpful. You know what I mean? It means a lot. And it shows, like, when you're young as well, money means a lot because you don't get that often. And young people go into drugs and stuff like that because they need money. But then when you have a qualification and you're getting money, you're buzzing. You're like, you're over the top with the joy. When I started Big Brother, I didn't want to go uni. Like, I hated education. I just wanted to work. But then you understand with Big Brother, they teach you to do something for yourself to be able to help my mom. So with education, when I get the grades that I need, the qualifications, then I can actually, my mom, I can help my mom instead of me just dropping out of college. I think from my dad's side, I think I'll be the first one to go to university. I'm trying to do sport therapy. My mom has always believed in me. When I found out I was going uni, she was buzzing. Abby, he's the funny guy. Like, he's my longest run friend. When we first met, we had that connection. We did things together. And when I started Big Brother with him, I wanted him to have the same thing as me. The words of Safiya was to make people take each other, not let one person down. Abby, he's a funny, he's a charming guy, and he's got a lot of qualities that like nobody else has. So for him to be where he is, I am actually so proud of him. He was a very shy guy. Now he's confident, he can speak, like, great speaker. He's going uni with me to Leeds as well. Just, I love him so much. Yeah, that before I had a small goals like, oh, I'm just finish this and get married. You know what I mean? They weren't really the goals that somebody needs. Now it's just like, oh, go to Leeds, progress, something, start something that I've not been done before. Achieve my biggest dream, not just my dreams, but my family's dreams. I've got bigger mindset and great things in life now, yeah. Well, what I'm most proud of what Big Brother has achieved is how we came all the way here as a group. Like, it's been 2 years and there's not been a time where we thought Big Brother would go down. It's always been on top and improving to be the best. And also what I'm proud of myself is me. After everything I've done so many great things, but I'm proud of myself because for sticking to what I've been doing, for just believing in me. As a founder, you can never believe, you know what I mean? I started this and I always be there.